Good morning. Glad that this is Super Sunday. You know, we're still continuing to celebrate Super Sunday, the real Super Sunday that happened 2,000 years ago. That's the Super Sunday that matters to the whole world. That's the Super Sunday that everyone in the world will know about and should recognize as the best Sunday that ever happened. Celebrate the victory of our Lord and Savior. And we're continuing to celebrate that victory. Can you tell me who won the Super Bowl last year? Now, there's some statisticians out here that probably can name all the Super Bowl champions that have ever happened. But what do they matter today? They don't matter a single thing. Enjoy the game today if you watch the game. Enjoy the commercials or enjoy the food or enjoy the rest if you're going to sleep through the whole thing. Whatever you're going to do. But know that the real champion that happened on Super Sunday was the Lord coming out of the grave. And that is continued. We continue to celebrate that. And we don't forget that. And we rejoice in that every day and every time we meet together. So I'm thankful this is Super Sunday. And it's always a Super Sunday as we get to celebrate the Lord's victory. The victory that conquered death. Now, whose team do you want to be on? The winning team, right? You want to be on the winning team? And the winning team is on the Lord's side. And so the Lord is risen, and we come to celebrate that today. And to remember that, as we're going through Luke 24, these are the first moments, as Luke records them, as the moments after the resurrection, after that Super Sunday, when the women went to the tomb expecting to find a dead body, going there to put the spices on, finding the stone rolled away, finding the tomb empty, and going to tell the other disciples about this wonder, about this amazement, proclaiming about what has happened. Unexpected, but foretold. Amazing, but known to them that the Lord said, this is what's going to happen. I am going to conquer the grave. Are you with me? Are you going to follow me to the grave? Are you going to follow me out of the grave? And that's where we are in the story. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know how much loss you've faced, how much grief you've experienced in your life. I know for all of us, there's probably been someone dear to us that has passed, someone that we really cared about that has brought upon grief. And probably me mentioning this brings that up to the surface. Fortunately, I've not experienced a lot of grief, but probably the biggest losses in my life have been my grandparents, both my mom's parents, Grandma and Grandpa Martin. And going through this section of the story that we're going through today made me think about the grief that the apostles must have been, or the disciples must have been feeling. At this point, all they know is the Lord had passed and the tomb is empty. They don't know that He is alive. So they're in a state of deep sorrow and grief, as I can imagine, as they're walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus. Now, thinking about my grandparents, my grandparents, their families homesteaded in northeast Montana, and they met out there, and they came to know each other. They were raised in one-room schoolhouses. My grandmother, she was a woman that was committed to the Lord. She was committed to her community. You always wanted to be at Grandma's house, whether you were a family or friend or even the mailman delivering the mail or the Schwann man. She would always have a nice bite to eat, a warm smile. She was deeply involved with the works of the church, the little Mona Church of Christ out in the Mona community, a little one-room church house just down the road from the one-room schoolhouse, a little bit further from the one-room community hall, and she was deeply involved in all of those. And it was an intricate part of loving on her community, participating in quilting programs and providing food. And she was the center of a lot of the entertainment. She loved to come up with witty poems, and she loved to sing, and she loved to, yes, dance. She would actually say that word, that I danced some. She was a mean Charleston dancer. You know, we went to some weddings, and if they weren't at the church building, she would get out there and dance, and love to dance with Grandma. And she But she also loved history. She loved to learn about the history of the area and come up with history books and cookbooks that had these stories. And she loved to be able to record these stories and write witty poems for other families in the community, also for our family as well. And I remember her as a woman of great faith, a woman of great talent and ability that cared for so many. And it was her house that hosted all the Thanksgivings and the Christmases, and she was a wonderful woman, and I still am sad that she is gone. My grandfather, he was a hardworking, always did whatever it took to make ends meet. Being raised in a dirt floor home and being able to provide his family a little one step up from that, they got plumbing and they got electricity. But my mom was also still went to a one-room schoolhouse and that one-room church house and that one-room community hall where they spent their time. My grandfather was one that would always help his neighbors out. He also never worked on a Sunday. And all his neighbors thought, you're crazy. You're never going to get your crop in or you're never going to get your crop out. He never missed a harvest and always took Super Sunday off for the Lord. He's one that taught me how to play the fiddle. Not very good at it anymore, but when it was time to pick an instrument, I want to be like Grandpa. He taught me how to play a couple songs. The one song I can still play is Turkey in the Straw that he taught me on the fiddle. Someday, maybe I can pull it outside and we can play it for you. It sounded just about as bad as it did when I was 10 years old when I was playing it then. But he also taught me how to tie a tie. Loved to joke around and love on his grandkids and telling us stories about he loved flying his, he had a Piper Cub airplane that he had. He loved flying his airplane. He loved my grandmother. And he was a hardworking man, had strong hands, a great heart, deeply involved with the Lord's church and the community as well. I'll never forget his funeral service. He died in the middle of December. Middle of December in Northeast Montana, very harsh winters. That's one of the coldest places in the United States at that time of year. They have the middle church house that they don't meet anymore, but they still have the Mona Church building is there, and there's a cemetery there, and all the plots are there from my family. My parents have their plots already reserved for when that time comes in their lives. But I remember they had a hard time digging the cold dirt up, but the neighbors got the plot set up, and we all stood out in the blizzard. We all stood out in the blizzard, not running away, not panicking, thinking about all the times that grandfather would have gone out in a blizzard, checking cattle, cracking up checking the water, breaking the ice from the water so his animals could drink, and remember them. And miss them very dearly. You know, a good funeral service is one that tells a good story. To be able to have a stranger walk in off the street into a place and not know a single thing about that person, but when they have left knowing something about them and knowing that that person's life mattered. And, you know, when someone passes and you get to be a part of a funeral service and get to share in that grief with others, you get to comfort, and just by being present in those moments. Well, the Lord had died. He was put in a tomb. Tomb was found empty. Women were left in amazement. Went and told the apostles, told the disciples. Peter goes running. He sees with his own very eyes the tomb is empty, and they're left to wonder. And in Luke 24, in verse 13, these two disciples were on their way from Jerusalem, 7 miles to Emmaus. They were talking about these things. They were talking about how the Lord had passed, how he had been with them, the things he had said, the things he had done. And Jesus walks up amongst them. But they're kept for some reason from recognizing him. Now, why they were kept from recognizing is unsure. Perhaps he looked different. Perhaps he sounded different. Perhaps I like to think their grief and their sorrow and their state of mind, the reality of the situation to think, this may look like him, he may sound like him, there's no way it could be him. But they were kept from recognizing him. And now Jesus comes up to them. Well, when people are in pain, or in sorrow, or you see that their faces are downcast, how do we respond? When you know someone's experiencing a disappointment or a down, whether it's from a loss in their life or maybe a failure in their life, and you can just tell by their demeanor, by their walk, by their stride, by the tone of their voice, how do we respond? Is that something that you naturally go rushing in towards, or something we have a little resistance to? You know, you ask someone how they're doing, and they say, well, not so well. Now what do? Do I walk into that, or do I bid you farewell? How do we respond? Well, notice the compassion of the Lord here. The Lord is knowing the situation. He knows what's happening. He knows how these apostles are feeling, these disciples. We don't know that they're apostles. We know they're disciples. They know he knew how they were feeling. And he walks with them. He's hearing them talk. He's hearing their tone. He's hearing, and he has compassion. And he has care enough to enter with them into their sadness. Well, think about relationships today. You know, at a time where it seems like we're so connected, but are we really? Are we really intimately connected with people? And that may be a choice that we all have, that we can connect on what levels or not we want to connect with. We might be so connected, but I think even though we might be connected through technology and so many devices, we tend to be very isolated. Very isolated, very on our own in our lives and our situations. I would say sometimes we live behind closed doors. And they may be actual physical closed doors, or they just may be metaphorically closed doors. Well, how do you get inside the door of another's heart? How do you let somebody inside the door of your heart to know where you are? Well, it is said that no one cares about what you know until they know that you care. Well, we'll see here as the Lord goes along with them how the Lord shows that he cares. I think first he cares by having compassion. Compassion, he's walking with them. He's hearing what they're discussing, the sorrow, the sadness, and he stays there. He's compassionate. He wants to show them that he loves them. He knows there's something greater here, but he's got to get them through their grief. He's got to get them through, and he hears about their sorrow, hears about this sad news they're talking about, and he has compassion, and then he begins to have conversation with them. He hears about their pain, and he doesn't walk away. He walks with them a while, but yet they're kept from recognizing him. He doesn't walk away, and he waits for that opportunity. He waits for that right time to knock. We don't know how long he walked with them before he said a word, but he was still hearing all this. Think about the times when you hear someone's grief or their sorrow or their disappointment, and what do? When we hear about that, do we stay or do we, you know, not that we don't care, but we're not willing to enter there. We're not ready to knock to ask, well, tell me about that. We're like, we tend to maybe say, okay, and we move on. Or you see someone sad, do we stop and we respond? Well, we see the Lord here. He knows. He cares. He has conversation. He waits for that opportunity to knock. And the next thing he does is he then asks a question. He cares enough. He hears about, knows that there's something here. There's a sorrow. There's a pain. There's a hurt that's going on here. And he knocks. What are you discussing together as you walk along? He asks. He's not assuming anything. He's not judging about anything. He asked the question, what are you discussing together as you walk along? He hears that there's something has happened. He may hear parts of the story, but he's asking, saying, I'm here. I care. Tell me more. And then he waits for a response. We know how long they wait, but we know there was a waiting because all of a sudden the disciples, they were walking and they stood still. This caught them off guard. They're talking about the sadness and the sorrow and their anxiety and their loss of what appears their hope in their life. And they stand still. What are you discussing? Almost catching them off guard. Like, you care?
whoever you are, they don't know who this person is. They're kept from recognizing it's Jesus. It's just another traveler. I mean, on these open roads, there could have been lots of people traveling back and forth and walking alongside and being together. You know, because if he was alone, it wouldn't have been uncommon if you're alone to find a crowd and stay with them because you're safer in numbers. They didn't know who this person was, but they knew he was there. And I don't know if he was right in front of them or trailing behind them or if they could really even see them. Maybe they couldn't keep from recognizing him because he was just a little bit kind of on the peripheral. You ever had that where you're going down somewhere and you know someone's over there, but you just can't recognize because you're not really looking, but you know the presence of there. I don't know the positions here, but Jesus comes along. He cares. He has compassion, and he begins to have a conversation, and he asks them a question. What are you talking about? And he waits, and they stood still. And the next thing you see is they said, we know they're in sorrow because their faces were downcast. You know, someone, you see them, maybe a sense that something's gone wrong with them, or maybe you know something's gone wrong with them, and you walk up to them, and their face is downcast. These guys are sad. They're experiencing grief and real pain, and Jesus is there with them, and their faces drop. Just like when I mentioned at the very beginning, when I said, think about someone, I saw a lot of faces drop. But Jesus waits. We know how long their face was down. Maybe they stood there for a while. Maybe they wept a little bit more. Maybe they looked at each other. Maybe they fell down to the ground in sorrow again. But Jesus waits. And while he waits, he's waiting. But when their faces rise, he's still there. You know, he could have asked that question, or someone could have asked that question. Tell me the things that have happened. You see them fall, and you go, oh, no, I just hit a soft spot. And they're down, and you kind of calmly remove yourself. Not sure if you want to go there. And that's okay. There might be times when we can't go there. But as their faces are downcast, his face goes up. He's still there. Okay? He's knocked. He's waiting. You ever have someone knock on your door, your real door of your house, and you kind of look out and go, and maybe you open the door and maybe you don't, and you go, okay, they're leaving. Good. Right? Or they knock and they're still waiting. They're not going away. Who is it? What do they want? And if they stay there long enough, you're going to have to open the door. Either get rid of them or see what they have to say, so then you can get rid of them. Right? Well, here Jesus is waiting. He's still there. And we see that he begins, these disciples turn now and begin to open the door, knowing that after this time of care and compassion, this person has cared enough to ask, and care enough to wait for them to come to lift their faces to see he's still here. He hasn't gone away. He's seen some sadness, seen some sorrow, and he obviously still wants some of this, wants to continue walking with us. It wants to stay with us. And they ask him, are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened here these days? I see some stages of grief here that these apostles or disciples are going through. Stages of grief that we may all see ourselves commonly have gone through. Some have five stages of grief and some have seven different ways. And there's the denial, that denying whether or not the reality that this really happened. And I believe at this point these disciples have gotten through that. They've accepted it. They've heard it. There's still a lot of questions. But now they're talking about it, a place where they're talking about what had happened. They're accepting that he had passed on. It's been two or three days since this has happened. They're accepting it. But they're definitely in the stage of pain. By the way that they were confronted with this, they stop and it causes their faces to go downward. They're in this place of pain. And we see later, we're going to cover this section next week. But the next stage in verses 19 and 20 and 21, we see them kind of starting to move through these next stages. We see some bargaining. In verse 20, it says, the chief priests, our ruler, handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. Trying to bargain and make sense of this, saying, trying to put the blame and trying to figure out how and why this is happening. They're going to move, but they're still in this place of pain. They haven't gotten there yet. But someone's knocking on the door to help move them through this, to help them know that they care, to get to these points. But later on, they begin this bargaining. And then later in verse 21, we see some depression set in. And it says after the chief priests of our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But here's the depression. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. And they move on. But here, Jesus stays. He has compassion. He asks. He's staying. And they respond, "Are you just a visitor and do not know the things that have happened these days?" We see the door has been cracked open a little bit. Now Jesus can see a little bit more into their lives. You know, when we stay along with someone and they're hurt and they're pain and their sorrow and they know we're still there, we've seen it by their expression, but now as the door opens up, you're able to peek in and see a little bit more. Now here's a place where you could stay, you could enter or go, "Ooh, it is kind of bad in there. I love you, care for you," and that's okay. Depends on where you're at and where you are committed to this other person. Jesus is deeply committed to these guys. He sees in and he can peek in, and they open the door. "Are you only a visitor here and you don't know?" We'll think, "There's more here, but we're cracking the door open for you." Jesus stays. He can see inside. He hears their question, and then he cares by responding. He's asked, they've opened the door, and he responds again. He can look in a little bit. There is something here. There's a road ahead. There's a lot to work. There's a lot of things going on there. And he responds by saying, "What things?" Saying, "I'm here. I'm staying. I'm with you." Then the disciples open the door completely. And he begins to enter in. He says, "What things?" And you almost could hear the sigh in their voice. The things about Jesus of Nazareth. He was a prophet. He was powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. And again, Jesus doesn't stay. He doesn't run away. He stays and he enters in. Jesus cares by entering their lives. He cares by showing compassion, by asking, by responding, and then by entering and continuing to walk with them on this journey down that road, to continue the journey along with them for them to come to understand the big picture of what God is doing and what God will do in their lives. Well, where are you today? Where are your emotions today? Where are you on this journey with the Lord? Do you have grief? Do you have pains? Do you have shame or guilt that you're carrying around that is keeping you downcast and maybe keeping you standing still on the journey and waiting for somebody to get you along? Waiting for Jesus to come by and get you going, waiting for someone else to come and show, and you're just stuck in that, and maybe it's causing you to fall off the path or get moving backwards on the path because of this emotional, because of this pain, because of this guilt, because of this situation in your life? Do you feel alone? Do you feel isolated? Well, where are your eyes? Are your eyes up or are your eyes down? Well, I want you to know the Lord cares. The Lord cares. He cares deeply for you wherever you are. And guess what? He already knows. That gives him another advantage. And he's not running away. He's not hiding. He's not scared. He wants to come in there and help you clean house as long as it takes. He wants to go to work with you. He doesn't want to say, "No, let me in, and you can leave a little while and then come back." No, he said, "I want to go in there with you. And I'll stay in there as long as you can, as long as we're in this together, to keep moving down this path." He's knocking, "Will you let him in?" Who needs to let the Lord in? Some are got their heart downcast. Some are standing still. Some have eyes that are down. But I want you to know the Lord cares and this church cares. Look around. Look around. Don't we care one for another? Yes, we do. We care one for another. Who needs for you to care for them? Who do you see that you needed to go to and knock and say, what are you discussing? What's going on? Where are you at? And for them to look up and go, you're here? And you see their faces drop, and you're there waiting. Tell me about these things. Let's go together. Well, I ask you this morning, for all of us, lift up your eyes. The Lord cares. He's compassionate. He knows. He's going to be with you. But you got to let Him in. If there's something that you'd like to share, a burden that you have this morning on your hearts, whether publicly or with someone here, you know, you don't just have to respond up front here, but there's a great way to do that. There are those you care about and love and you trust to go to them. Well, if you see someone here today and you think, man, I got a burden for them. I know something's going on there. I don't want to assume anything. I want to go and I'm going to be with them. I'm going to find the opportunity to knock. I'm going to wait. And then I'm going to ask them if they crack the door a little bit. I say, tell me about those things. And the best thing you can do a lot of times is just to be present and to listen. Let's be a church that cares. Be a church that listens. Let's be a church that walks along each other, beside each other in this journey. And let's know that the Lord cares. He's on this journey. If you'd like to respond in the day, we'd love to help you, encourage you, listen to you, and pray for you this morning, even as we stand and as we sing.